And our two special guests, Eric Olson, Teresa Argee, right here as we talk about the work, America's Most Haunted on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Eric Olson with us, Teresa Argee as well. Eric, welcome back.
Thanks, George.
Wide awake, chipper, ready to go, huh?
I am. I was having such a great time listening to you guys chat it up. And hello, Teresa. Great job.
Hey, Eric.
We're going to take some phone calls, continue chatting. Hey, a couple more places I wanted to talk about. The Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, Waverly Hills is one of my very favorite places. This is an old tuberculosis hospital, and it used to sit on the highest point in the city, and this is where how they would treat tuberculosis before they had antibiotics. Fresh air and sunshine and good nutrition. That was their only fight against this disease they called the White Plague. And Waverly Hills, unfortunately, it was a place where so many people came, and it really became overcrowded very quickly because the disease spread so rapidly, and they weren't even sure how it was spreading at the time. And obviously it was spreading through air. So these people had to be sequestered. And unfortunately, a lot of people came to die to Waverly Hills. But they tried to keep it as a place of hope, and they really tried their very best to help these people. But unfortunately, many of them lost the battle with tuberculosis. The interesting thing about Waverly Hills and about tuberculosis itself, and I didn't know this until we started researching the book, is that tuberculosis could actually affect you mentally. Once the disease got into your bloodstream, it could affect your brain. So a lot of these Jeez. People, besides being very physically ill, were also mentally disturbed. So lots of horrific treatments went on inside Waverly Hills, but they were really trying to help. They weren't trying to be mean. They were these last-ditch efforts, these thoracoplasties and these deflating the lungs and all the things that they did to try to help these people. But many people died there. Many, many people went into Waverly Hills and never went out except through a body bag. So very sad.
What do you do about children who want to go on ghost hunts?
I think you really have to be wary of children and ghost hunting. I used to be of the mindset that children don't belong on a ghost hunt, that they shouldn't be messing with the paranormal, and I have children myself. But when I stepped back after a few years of research and I realized most children, not all of them, but many children, a good majority of them, have paranormal experiences. So why not embrace that so they're not scared of it, so they understand it? So I don't think you have a problem with children ghost hunting as long as you teach them how to protect themselves and shield themselves from negativity the best way you can, and to be open, because like my experience as a child was being told that it wasn't true and that it was evil and bad and you shouldn't mess with it, and that just kind of confused me. So I don't think you should discourage them, but I think you should be very careful and cautious and maybe do a little hand-holding with children in the paranormal. But it's not for everybody, and that's for sure. You have to know your child.
Ever been either one of you to the Pennsylvania State Reformatory or Penitentiary?
I have not. That is on my bucket
list. That's haunted.
I have not been there.
You can even
I haven't either.
Al Capone's cell.
The shows, we've seen some really, really good investigations of them kind of from different angles, and it also has one of the top-rated haunted attractions in the country, and that's kind of an interesting direction that things have gone in. When I was looking back over the book, just kind of preparing to talk tonight, I was just kind of thumbing through, and it dawned on me that many of our 10 locations also have haunted attractions during the Halloween season, so they are haunted attractions.
So what is there science behind any of this, Eric?
Well, I think science is trying to understand it. I think one of the really positive aspects of the new attention and the new normality, the normality of the paranormal that has come about over the last 10 or 15 years, say, especially in relationship or after all of the paranormal investigation shows came along and became so popular. So people are a lot more open to it now, and I think included are scientists or those of a scientific bent. So there's certainly people out there doing research. They're very serious parapsychologists who are trying to figure out the relationship between psychic activity, between minds, and what is it that actually carries thought or carries information through the air, as it were, or actually not through the air. And they're trying to get underneath that. As we were talking a couple hours ago, I do think there's a really interesting connection or potential connection between parallel universes. I mean, that could certainly be a source of paranormal activity. That could be where the spirits go, quote unquote, is if they're slipping in between these parallel universes that are so close together, but yet typically closed off from each other, other than perhaps through portals or for people or spirits with special abilities. So that would be a few of the applications of science. And then I think there's something to the whole attachment, the quantum attachment, entanglement, where they've been showing now, this is just so recent, they're now able to take electrons and separate them. They entangle them, and then they can separate them by hundreds of miles. And when you apply, when you measure one, the other is changed at the exact same moment, hundreds of miles away. How can that be? No one knows what that mechanism is.
All right, to the phones now we go. Pam is truck driving in Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Hey, Pam, go ahead.
Yes. I need to ask Teresa. I have a 3-year-old great-granddaughter that talks to my brother, which died in March, and another person in our family, well, in my son's wife's family. Is that possible?
Well, it sure is. Go ahead, Teresa.
Oh, well, absolutely, especially at the age of 3. Like I was, we were talking earlier, George, children are very open to this. They don't know that ghosts don't exist. They haven't, they can't even grasp the fact that what's happening to them isn't normal.
Right.
That's why I think that the children have these paranormal experiences, and why especially our deceased loved ones tend to come and visit these small children, because they're just so open to it and accepting for it. And it happens all the time. My daughter at the age of 2 would have my father, who had passed away, visit her all the time and sit and have conversations with him at night. And it was just like he was really living and breathing. So it's absolutely possible. And I think it's a blessing. And unless they're doing something to threaten her or to hurt her, having her relatives, her deceased ones that maybe she won't have a chance to know because she's so little and they're past, to come and visit her and to communicate with her, I mean, I think that's a blessing, and I hope that the family is not telling her, no, this isn't happening, because that is just going to confuse the poor little thing. So I think that it's a blessing. She should be very grateful. And I was a little jealous when my daughter was talking to my dad, because I didn't get to see him. He didn't come to me that way. So it certainly is possible, and I hope it's a very positive, pleasant experience for her.
Eric, what do you think is going on with the paranormal side? Why does it exist? What is it there for?
Well, I'm not positive if there is a distinction between what we typically think of as religious belief, the spiritual aspect of religion, versus the paranormal. There's a lot of investigators who seems to be about, the ones we've talked to, it seems to be about half and half, where half are pretty strong believers have religious belief, and who do see that as very much connected to the paranormal. And in fact, they take comfort in that and use religious aspects to protect themselves. The other half are very much anti-religion and are atheists. And so for them, of course, there is no religious aspect to it. I think, just from my mind, I see it kind of as a triangle. And on one corner is what we call the paranormal. On one side, we have science, and on one side, we have religion. And I see them connecting and overlapping and kind of flowing into each other. I am not really certain where one side ends and another begins, but I do think there is an energy aspect to it. I think it's possible there's a multi-dimensional or parallel universe aspect to it. And I do think there's absolutely a soul or a spirit or the essence of an individual aspect to it as well.
Next up, Gus is in Flagstaff, Arizona with us. Gus, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I just had a few things. The connection with Eric was saying with the parallel universes, just talked about Friedrich Nietzsche's eternal recurrence theory, how that could be connected. And then I'm not sure about this, but I think quantum physics has proved that all objects are fluid until the observer actually looks at it, and then it becomes solid. And it reminded me of what you were saying about the molecules hundreds of miles away. And then the main thing I wanted to just say was the life after death issue. Like, you know, arguably the fear of death is the greatest fear of all. And if it could be proven that there actually is life after death, all this fear that we're all walking around with would disappear. And ghosts, I mean, if ghosts are real, and like you said, Eric, if that spirit actually is there, like that's part of the triangle, then life after death exists. And it would just be so amazing to actually have proof of that. And unfortunately, the White Crow, Leonora Piper, you know, arguably the greatest psychic in history, when William James and Hoskins from the Psychical Research Center found, she wasn't sure. I mean, she was talking, when she was going to these trances, she would talk to supposedly all these dead relatives of all these people. They asked her, are you talking to the people that are dead? And she said, I'm not sure. It might just be the thoughts in the person's head. So that's all I wanted to throw out there. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Who wants to react to that?
Teresa, go ahead.
Well, I'm not familiar with some of the theories that he was just talking about, so I can't really comment on that. I think that I don't think most people have a fear of death. I think it's more of the fear of the unknown. I don't think we need to prove life after death. I think that the problem, and I don't think that a lot of people would be very happy knowing that there is life after death, especially people who maybe don't believe in anything. Some people don't want anything. I mean, there are people that if there is such thing as an afterlife and they have not lived a good life, they might be fearful of any kind of life after death, thinking that they might be punished. I think that especially people with a religious belief and religious background, for me, I don't need proof of life after death, and that has nothing to do with the paranormal. That is completely a religious thing. My religion says that you take it on faith, and so it has nothing to do with the paranormal. I believe because I have faith. It just so happens that the paranormal, it does prove, but even if I wasn't involved in the paranormal, I would still believe in life after death, and that is because of my religious beliefs. And I think that most, if not all, religious cultures have some sort of afterlife or life after death or something beyond the physical body after the physical body dies. So I don't know if proving the life after death or proving ghosts is necessarily should be the end goal. Like I said earlier, I don't need to prove to anybody that ghosts exist. I know they do. And if I'm wrong, when I die, it won't matter.
That's right. You're not going to know it anyway.
You know.
And that's what I try to tell people. I think one of the fears, as you said earlier, Teresa, of the unknown, one of the fears for people might not be dying. It may be the fear of what's on the other side, or the split second, the moment of emptiness when you think there's nothing there, when you don't believe,
I mean,
there's anything.
You can have fear of dying, but not necessarily fear of death, the fear of being dead. So I think there's a difference between the two.
Let's go to Jacob in Wellington, Florida, first-time caller. Jacob, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How you doing? I actually wanted to ask Eric a question.
You got it. Go ahead.
The question was, he said something about sitting up like real quick in his bed, and he seen a black figure in the corner of the room, and it came up to him and kind of like enveloped him. Is that the only time it's ever happened to you?
Yes. And speaking from the scientific standpoint, certainly many, many listeners or readers will say, well, that is an absolute classic description of sleep paralysis. And it is. And I suppose anything is possible, but I was absolutely assured. I was better than I had known anything in my life that I was awake and looking around the room. No, that has never happened to me in that manner before or since. And that's part of why it was so powerful, and that it really did seem to be some sort of very specific connection to my grandmother. And it wasn't that black mass, of course, was my grandmother. As I said earlier, my mother and I really hold firmly and hope and do believe that we were somehow participating in her experience. And by doing that, we were taking some of the burden and the pain and the fear away from her. And that, of course, is very comforting to me. Just real, real quick to the previous caller, I do feel that the implications of quote-unquote proof of life after death really is staggering and significant. And that first experience with just watching Ghost Adventures just in passing, that is what struck me. It's, wow, if any of this is real at all in any way, the implications really are monumental, because it really does mean that something, somehow, some way, whether it's just our emotions or our energy, but that it does linger on. And if you factor in further some form of intelligence, now all of a sudden that is some form of life after death.
How did the ancients know this?
Boy, they seem to know a lot of things.
They do, more than we did, yeah.
Or that
are never passed on to us.
Don't want to address. I mean, you can say the same thing about between cultures. When you look at Asian culture, I mean, certainly no one would say Asians are less intelligent or less knowledgeable. And, of course, I'm greatly generalizing when I say Asians. There's no monolith. But basic Asian culture just simply accepts a spirit world, assumes that there is a spirit world, and that they can interact, and that that is an ongoing thing, and that that's a part of life that needs to be addressed. That's why you have the Ghost Month that was just in August, where they're interacting with familiar and even unfamiliar spirits throughout that entire month. And I think earlier on, the earlier version of man, in some ways, it's like childhood. I think the...
All right, hold on, Eric. We got to hit the break. We'll be back. And as you know, Ghost to Ghost will be on Halloween night on Friday, October 31st. And we are taking some of your email ghost stories. You have to include your phone number because we'll call you back and probably get you on the show. The email address is linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now, but it's ghoststory@coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast, final segment with Eric Olson and Teresa Argy as we talk about their work, America's Most Haunted. Eric, the book is out. You just mentioned it right off the presses, but where do people get it?
Well, of course, you can get all books that ever were on Amazon. You can also get it both online and in person from Barnes & Noble. It's certainly available in digital form as well. And I would hope it's in all of your independent bookstores. And as readers, lifelong readers, both Teresa and I really do encourage you, if at all possible, to visit your independent bookstore. That's a tradition that is fading away so quickly,
true.
And we'd love to see it continue, that personal personalized feel that we are losing so quickly, and of course not just with books, but in many other kinds of shopping.
Need to keep them strong.
I'd love to. Yeah. I really would. It's something I miss very much. I miss having more chains even available. There aren't really very many chains left even.
No, there's not. So, Teresa, when people call you as one of the haunted housewives, what do they want you to do? Get rid of the ghost? Communicate? What's the goal?
Sometimes people call us because they just want validation. They want to know, you know, what's going on, who's haunting their house, what is it paranormal at all? Is what's happening paranormal, or is there a logical, physical explanation? Is it something that might just be in their imagination? And, I mean, we've done investigations before where there was nothing paranormal going on at all. There was a physical cause to what was perceived as paranormal activity. And we've also done investigations where the people were just maybe a little off. Maybe they just weren't taking their medication. So you have to be very careful when you do any sort of residential investigations. And we really don't do those so much anymore. We usually work from the historical angle, and we work with historical sites and buildings. But we will on occasion do that. When we do even a business or a not so much a historical society. Historical sites need to keep their ghosts because that's what keeps people interested in many cases. But for like a home or a business that is supposedly haunted, what they call us in, we are not ghost maids. I know we have the haunted housewife moniker and, you know, our little caricatures with our little dust mops and brooms and such, but we don't clear ghosts out. I don't have the ability to get rid of a ghost. I don't have the authority to send a ghost to the light. A good psychic medium might be able to encourage or entice a spirit to leave. But for me, I don't think that I have that authority. I don't think I have the right to get rid of a ghost, especially if a ghost is in a place that was their home for 40 or 50 years. They think the living are the intruders. So as much as some people want us to clean the ghosts out and get rid of the ghosts, we don't do that. We're not ghost maids. But we can try and figure out why they're hanging around and what it is they want. What are they trying to establish by the haunting, if anything? And maybe then we can encourage them to either live and cohabitate with the people that are in their home or business now, or to leave them alone so they can kind of coexist.
Do you tell the client from the outset that you're not out to get rid of the ghost?
Absolutely. We tell them that, you know, we can't do that. We can figure out what's going on and find a happy ground where everyone's comfortable and everyone seems to be okay with what's going on. But if they really do need something, if they have something that's negative, we can do a house cleansing and a house blessing. But that is basically to kind of sweep out negative energy, not necessarily ghosts, but get rid of the negative energy. And I think everybody should be doing that every once in a while with their home, and then inviting positive energy in. And even if you don't have a haunted house, you should probably consider doing that, especially if you're moving. But if it is become so bothersome where it's something very bad and possibly demonic, you really need to get a medium involved, a psychic medium who you trust and knows what they're doing, because that goes a little bit beyond my pay grade. I can't really do that.
Okay, with the time left, let's take calls. Let's go to Sue in Chico, California, west of the Rockies here. Susan, Hello. Go ahead. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Sue.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
My mother let me know that she was going to go away 3 days before she died, and I also think I've got a ghost in my apartment as well.
Well, now tell me about how she let you know she was going
to She came
depart.
To me in a dream, and she talked to me like she was physically there in a dream, and she said, I'm going to go away, and she said, you'll see me later, but she says, I've got to go away, and she says, I'm going to God's house, but you'll see me later, and 3 days later, she was gone for real.
Wow. Wow. And what's going on now?
I think I've got a ghost in my apartment. In fact, I know I've got more than one in here. Because I can, you know what happens is I can feel them because there's temperature changes in the room.
Are they friendly?
Yeah. I happen to be a blind person, George.
All right, take over, Teresa. What do we do here?
Well, I think that it was a blessing that your mother could communicate with you and kind of prepare you for the fact that she was going to pass. And this is a very common thing that people experience. We seem to get a lot of ghost visitations, at least that's what I consider them to be, through dreams. When you think about it, everybody dreams. Everyone has dreams at night. And when you dream, like when you dream of a loved one that's passed, so you dream about your mother who's passed, when you dream about her, most of the time it's probably a very pleasant dream. And you wake up saying, oh, I was dreaming about my mom, and you were thinking about her, and she was in your thoughts and in your memories and in your prayers. But if your mother or if anybody appeared as a ghost at the end of your bed or next to you in the middle of the night, you'd be terrified. So I think that our loved ones especially know that this is a way that they can communicate with us and appear to us and connect with us without us being completely horrified and terrified and just thinking of as a negative thing instead of a positive experience. So dreams definitely have our ghost visitation. And I think people know, at least I know, when I'm just dreaming about my father having a dream or when it's him coming to visit me, there's definitely a difference in the tone and what's happening in the dream. And as a blind person, Sue, you probably are much more sensitive using all your other senses to be able to detect spirit activity. So you may be sensitive yourself, or you may very well be sensing things in your apartment. Since you don't have your vision to rely on, your other senses might possibly be very heightened.
Eric, what's the next trip for your group? Where do you go?
Well, Teresa and I very much want to do, if we're talking about projects, we'd love to continue on with the America's Most Haunted. We think we've made a really great start with the brand between the book, social media, the website. We have a weekly radio show that we're actually going to try to turn now into a podcast, because that seems to be the way things are going.
That's going, yep. Sure,
and
is.
Then physically, we are going to Bobby Mackey's on Friday. We're very, very excited about that. Returning there, and we get to interact with people once again who are there. Hopefully they're interested in the book, but we also get to kind of lead a tour. So we get to talk about the things that happened to us when we were investigating for the book and the stories we tell in the book while we're actually in that spot. So that will be very interesting, and I'm really chomping at the bit to see if anything, well, probably something will, but to see what will happen in this new context. So that's this very Friday. It's down in Wilder, Kentucky, just across the river from Cincinnati, and we are very, very excited about that. And really appreciate all this time. It's so fun to talk with you. You are a tremendous communicator.
Ah, I'm having a great time with both of you. Mike in Russellville, Arkansas. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, top of the morning to you guys.
You too.
I have two little short statements, and then I have two questions.
All right.
I'll keep it brief. The first one is, it's almost an out-of-body experience to get through to you, George.
Yeah,
and,
sure is.
I have been to the other side and sent back, and I've witnessed the darkness and the brightness, and apparently the Lord's not done with me. Now to my questions. My father passed away, back around 95, 96, during the Waco incident. And I was there at his bedside when he passed, and I flew back to Texas, where I was living at the time. And he appeared in my dream in the T-shirt and underwear that he passed away in, and he said to me in my dream, I don't know where to go. And in my dream, I just responded, well, Mom's in Arkansas. And sometimes I beat myself up about it because I didn't give the right answer about go to the Lord. And that's the serious one. The next one is kind of a novelty question. I was wondering if they ever run across pets in their experiences with the spirit world.
Pets. Teresa?
Absolutely. Pets, I think pets, especially if people are very attached to their pets, I think that they can be around us in spirit form. In fact, at one of our locations in the book, and that is the Willoughby Cole, where I was at tonight, there is the spirit of a dog, a very beloved dog that was one of the owner's pet that is still there. But I want to comment first on what you said earlier.
Sure.
About your father, and you beat yourself up over giving him the wrong answer. There is no wrong answer. So you're not responsible for your father's afterlife, and I'm sure he's just fine. I'm sure that he found his way to the Lord, or the Lord found him. Maybe he just wasn't ready to move on, or maybe he wanted to see your mother. So I would not beat yourself up about it. Again, we can't really play God, especially from this side of the fence. So don't worry about that. Just, you know, your father's fine, and I'm sure that he will come and visit you again and tell you something. But yes, pets, definitely. Animal spirits, of course, all the time. I believe that 100%.
Let's go to Woodridge, New Jersey now. Sharon's there. Sharon, go ahead.
Hi. Well, I was just listening to you, and you know, and I know that there's you know, another dimension, because you know, I was in a car accident, and I've had quite a few surgeries on my neck and spinal cord and stuff, and I've died a few times and came back, and so I mean, each time I got a little bit further, but I always came back. But like my body, I mean, like my spirit basically separated from my body. And once I even rose up backwards and watched myself as I was rising up. It's definitely, you know, another dimension. I'm a Christian, and, you know, so it really, you know, it got me a little scared. But you're calm in there. You're calm. You're relaxed. There's no problems. There's no fear. It's just everything is so bright. And I did see your figure. I think it was a man in a row, but I don't know for sure, because it was like so bright, like when you're staring at the sun, you can't stare because it's just so bright. You got to kind of squint. So I just kept rising. And then all of a sudden I started thinking about who's going to take care of my son, because I have a son that's disabled and my mother's like real old. And all of a sudden I stopped. And then I guess they figured, well, I guess we should send her back. And I went, and I started getting lowered back into me. And at the time, my boyfriend was there shaking me, and I couldn't say anything. He was shaking me, and I was watching him shake me. And then as soon as I, you know, as soon as my body and I guess my spirit came together, then I could open my eyes and talk to him. But it's a beautiful place. You're content. You're calm. You're not, you know, scared or worried. It's definitely another dimension.
It's definitely serene, I think. Teresa, you're not in any rush to get there, are you?
No, I'm in no rush to find out for sure what's on the other side. I think it's fascinating, the whole idea of an out-of-body experience, and I have had out-of-body experiences, especially when I was younger. Didn't understand what they were. I know now that they were, and I think these near-death experiences that people have, that they come back from these experiences, and they are all of a sudden much more open to these paranormal experiences. I think that whole thing is fascinating, almost like the closer you get to touching the other side, you bring a piece of it back with you. We did an investigation years ago, a couple of them at this one place, and the property was haunted and the owner was having all these things happen. And we come to find out he had two near-death experiences. And each time, the first time it was a very negative thing, and the second time it was a much more positive thing, because he turned his life around after the first one. And after the second one, he said, "I still have more work to do. Let me stay." And he was very open. He didn't want to be, but he was very susceptible to paranormal activity and was seeing spirits all the time. And I find it absolutely fascinating. I mean, that they can, it's almost like they have a third eye or another sense that we don't, where they can see things that are happening. And that's kind of a gift that they've gotten from getting so close to touching the other side.
Let's go to Bob in Chicago. Squeeze you in here, Bob. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Yes, I would like to ask your guest, in your opinion, how do these ghosts get along? Let's say you have somebody that's killed a few people, and they meet up with these people that they killed. In your opinion, how do they get along? What goes on?
I think there really is a sociology of spirits, and that we've actually been talking about that lately, and I think we address it a little bit in the book, because often with these really crowded places like the institutions, where there's been hundreds or thousands of deaths and many of them under very emotionally strained conditions, so you have these layers. And I think partly they layer historically, but I think they also start interacting based on either commonalities or, like you were saying, you know, a relationship between a killer and a victim. And I think that that is part of what is going on. And of course, obviously, it's just speculation, but I think part of what's going on the other side and those who have not fully moved on is they are working out these relationships. They're working out these feelings and they're coming to terms with them. So I think that that's really a very interesting question. And, you know, it's one that some people might take as somewhat facetious, but I think it's a very interesting literal question. And I even think there is some form of hierarchy within some of these locations among the spirits. So, you know, I don't think you escape the cool kids group even when you pass on.
Not at all. Eric and Teresa, I want to thank you for both being on the program.
Thank you so much for having us on, George. This is a real pleasure, and it means a lot to actually be on Coast to Coast. And I just want to throw in one thing. We're also going to be at Wanda Kay's Ghost Shop on Friday when we're down in Wilder, Kentucky. So if you can't make it to Bobby Mackey's, come and see us at Wanda Kay's.
Wanda Kay's it is. And Eric, thank you so much. America's Most Haunted. That's the name of the book. It's a great spot. Go visit all those 10 locations. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.